Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It is Monday, September 19th, and we are getting down the road of the fall. Starting to cool off here in Texas. Hope it's been, you had a good weekend wherever you are located. We have listeners from all over the nation. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anywhere and anytime. Now, we're getting more into video. We're doing that. It's starting to happen on the Hot Topics segments. We released a Hot Topic. We're starting to do this with some regularity. Real excited about the Hot Topics that are coming out. We're turning this podcast that's live, we turn that into a more of a mortgage update of what's going on. So I'm very excited about that. And joining me now again is, again, we have Mark Helm here as the co-host. Mark, good to have you joining me here.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we'll announce what happened to Jack. Jack, he got this ridiculous offer. We'll talk maybe about it at some point in time to come out of retirement. That's what happened. So he got enticed. And so we'll talk about that at another point. But we love Jack. He greets everybody, and hopefully he'll be able to participate some in the podcast. It's just something, his passion. He loves doing it. But we're so grateful to have Mark Helm joining us. And we are going to be getting you to let you know, get to know Mark a bit better. But you're going to get to hear him every single day. Every single time we have a new podcast, he'll be co-hosting this with me. Again, we want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, leading point-of-sale technology platform for origination. Got to check out what they do, as well as you look at FormFree. What they're doing is being a leading provider of direct source VOAs, verification of asset, VOIs, and ease verification income and employment data. What they're doing there is just so innovative, as well as Lender Toolkit. Brett Emler and Brett are doing a great job with what they're doing. We've got several clients that are talking about they're the most affordable solution with the most complete amount of technology. I encourage you to check them out, as well as SnapDocs, which powers over 3 million mortgage closings a year for lenders, and that is going up based on the number of adoptions that are happening out there. You know, when you look at the tech platforms that are out there, Simple Nexus, we're thrilled to have them as a sponsor, by the way. Check them out in the interview we did with on June 27th with Shane Westra. But Simple Nexus, Total Expert, which is, again, a total experience platform, unifies the data and marketing, sales, and compliance solutions for a cohesive experience across the customer lifecycle. So Total Expert does that. Then SnapDocs, Lender's Toolkit. And we got joining us, I'm very excited about joining us in October, will be Candor. We've got the lineup of the best fintech out there, especially with Finastra as the number one fintech company in the world, not just the nation, but in the world. And so we've got the team, and we're so grateful for our sponsors. Also grateful to have the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, the MBA, whose conference is coming up in Nashville. If you're not registered, get to this. This could be an important conference. We listened to this just got off the phone, and the people that attended the digital conference in Las Vegas last week were really disappointed. 95% of the people who were there were vendors. Very few lenders ended up showing up. And it's no wonder. We're going to be talking a little bit about what vendors are doing to cut back on expenses, because the volume has just not been there. So what are others doing out there? Also, the Mortgage Collaborative, I want to say a special thank you to them, as well as Lenders One. These are two co-ops that do a great job of helping you meet a smaller environment than the more intimate settings than the MBA. You could be a member of the MBA, but you should also be a member of one or both of these co-ops, because it allows you to connect with other lenders or vendors that meet specifically your needs. It's more of I would say up close and personal experience. And everyone that belongs to these things talk about the power of these two co-ops and what they've done for their business. Also, Success Kit does a great job with what they're doing. And helping your story get told, telling a testimony. most important thing is how you tell your story. Success Kit will help you do that. Knowledge Kit does Knowledge Group, which has the September 26th coming up, and the September 30th they have continuing education classes. There's a 10% discount code. You go to our show notes today. You'll see the code in there for the discount. Get signed up. And Ken Perry and the team there at Knowledge Group do a phenomenal job on the continuing education. Also, we have Mobility MMI and Modex. Both these companies do a great job at helping you and the recruiting part of your business. It's also bringing you mortgage intelligence. Is what the real estate firms are selling the properties. Who do you need to be in relationship with? Both firms have got just a wealth of data there. We're so grateful to have all you as listeners. We're grateful to have Adam DeSantis, Les Parker, Matt Graham, David Kittle, Alice, who's here and been here since the beginning, along with Alan and Mark and myself here with you on another podcast. So excited to have you here, folks. And we'll look forward to getting into us a little bit more. See here, I want to quick let you know, we have a client. I'm not going to name the name of the client, but we have a client that is looking for a chief compliance officer. If you know or you are aware of some compliance officer is qualified that is looking for work, please have them contact me, and I will refer them into a great job opportunity. They can work remotely. They do not have to be in this, but to where this company is headquartered, they can work remotely. So actually, you can send it to recruit@tms-advisors.com. Way to go, Ben. My assistants do an awesome job. recruit@tms-advisors.com. We will make sure the resumes get forwarded on. Let's get over to Adam DeSantis with the MBA for this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. What you got for us, Adam?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Here are two big developments last week that are important to share. The first, MBA led a coalition of real estate trade groups in a drafted letter submitted to the White House National Economic Council that urged them to support the reduction of mortgage insurance premiums for FHA loans. The letter highlighted the continued housing affordability crisis impacting prospective homebuyers, while also emphasizing the current strength of FHA's Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund. Also last week, the full House of Representatives advanced VA appraisal modernization legislation. The MBA-endorsed legislation garnered broad bipartisan support and would require the VA to review appraisal certification requirements, encourage hybrid appraisals, employ emerging technologies, and revisit policies on property inspection waivers and minimum property requirements. MBA will continue to advocate for the Senate to swiftly pass companion legislation, either as a standalone measure or as part of other moving legislative vehicles. Now that's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Grateful for the MBA, their contribution and what they do to help our industry. If you're not members of the MBA, you certainly should be. And make sure you continue to help them by paying dues. And we're members of the MBA. I've been there, members of them for, gosh, almost 49 in my 49 years. So encourage them and also sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance app. You can do that. Download that from your smartphone, from your app stores, and get there on that. You do not have to be a member of the MBA to have your voice heard on the Hill. I'm talking about Capitol Hill, and support the various initiatives they have going on. It's so easy to just click and have your voice heard. Check it out. Mortgage Action Alliance app. Let's get over to Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les Parker, what are you and Gary Cantrobone, what'd you cook up for us this week? Can't wait to hear it.
Fed's boots are made for stopping. Inflation gets its due. One of these days, these boots are gonna stomp all over you.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
The Fed can slow inflation with stomping boots while offering futile tools to stimulate economic activity.
When central banks try to stimulate activity, they create excess liquidity, which, if not reduced, creates exaggerated inflation during a recovery. Bonds see healthy action by central banks, but they also see a futile recovery jeopardized by inept U.S. actions to address supply issues. Ironically, when the Fed starts walking back liquidity, long-term rates fall. So, Fed boots, are you ready? Start stomping. These views are my own. Learn more about Stompin' Boots at tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, if you want to learn more about Stompin' Boots and all that Les has to say each week, along with his unique ability to pull out music metaphors and tie it to what's going on in the market, check it out. It's tmspotlight.com. Again, this is one of the most widely read, most it has a lot of strong technical information in there, but also just gives you great strategies and where you're at. Everyone's talking about pricing right now. And are you using all the tools you have available to you? Are you using options, for example? You need to get a hold of Les Parker and that team, but you first need to start learning about this by reading. It's not an audio deal. It's a reading, the TM Spotlight, and check it out. You can do so by going to tmspotlight.com, subscribe for free for the paid version, get it for free by putting in the word power in there as the code, and it's for Power Seller. Good job. Matt Graham is not with us today. He is under the weather. We hope to God he doesn't have COVID or anything like that, but Matt is not here. But he did send in a report on what's going on in the markets. I'm really interested in this. I had to be traveling up. I have father-in-law passed away last week, and so I was at a funeral up in Washington State, so I have not had a chance to stay on top of the markets. So I always pay attention to the screens that Matt has with MBS Live. But let's hear what he has to say and what's happened last week and what we have to look forward to this week. Matt?
Hey, everybody. This is Matt Graham with MBS Live Market Update. Bonds are significantly weaker today to start the new week, and they lost quite a bit of ground last week. The key to do was the CPI report on Tuesday. There's a lot of expectation leading up to that, as it was the big inflation highlight between last week and this week's Fed announcement, expected to give the Fed clarity on how much they might hike rates on Wednesday. 75 basis points is baked in. The CPI data came in strong enough or high enough to introduce some possibility of a 100 basis point hike. And in specific terms, the core month-over-month CPI came in at 0.6 versus a forecast of 0.3. So quite a big beat and a big wake-up call for the market or those in the market who had perhaps perceived a shift in inflation that now looks a bit premature. And the Fed may have to act accordingly when it comes to convincing the market it is serious about getting inflation under control. The Fed's rate hike this Wednesday might not be the extent of what they do. Certainly there's the dot plot as well, released at the same time as the announcement at 2 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon, Eastern Time. And the dot plot conveys each Fed member's expectation for where Fed funds rate will be at various points in the future. And it's expected to show a big shift from the last time we got dots back in June. It only happens four times a year. In addition to that, Fed Chair Powell gives his normal press conference half an hour after that, and he could also use that venue as a way to further promise additional policy tightening. Either way, yields pushing up against super long-term highs, more volatility is perhaps in store. And on a positive note, it could be an opportunity for the market to sort of position defensively for what it thinks might be a very hawkish Fed, only to breathe a sigh of relief when everything is over. So you might have some uncertainty premium priced into the market here that could be priced out a little bit after the Fed. Then again, if the Fed really sticks to its guns and surprises the market with just how willing it is to be hawkish, then we haven't seen the last of rates moving sharply higher. Either way, the fact that Fed policy hurts the short end of the yield curve more than the long end is bad news for the mortgage market. It is pushing MBS spreads to much wider levels than they have been in the past several years. We'd have to go all the way back to 2011 at this point to see anything worse as far as MBS underperformance versus treasuries. And that's also having an effect on premium pricing. That's not the only thing having an effect on premium pricing, but simply the fact that rates are as high as they are and expected at some point to recover, thus sparking refi demand and eroding the value of premium pricing for lenders right now, that is basically resulting in borrowers needing to bring cash to the table for many things, even run-of-the-mill scenarios that only maybe needed to cover a little bit in terms of LLPAs. That pricing just doesn't exist right now, and it's a cold new reality that borrowers are going to need to step up and contribute to closing costs in a way that lenders normally were able to via premium pricing that no longer exists. So bottom line for this week, Wednesday afternoon, 2 p.m. Fed announcement, big volatility potential. We haven't necessarily seen the last of high rates. Much depends on what they say and how they say it, and there's definitely room to move in either direction. That's going to do it for this week. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you so much. Boy, he does not sound good when he recorded that. He normally has a really good radio voice already, but boy, that was extra resonance in there. Was the result of him not feeling well or what's going on in the markets? Mark, let's get your perspective on this, looking at what's going on. We did not think, none of us did, that we'd be testing the highs and where these support levels are going to be settling in. I like the fact that Matt referred to there's some good news in this. There might be, it may not be quite as bad, and we might see this settle in. But the bottom line is the uncertainty, Mark. Love to get your perspective on it. You and I both have owned mortgage companies in our past lives, and we have been through these kind of seasons. I'm not sure exactly. Everyone seems to – every cycle, Mark, seems to be have a lot of similarities, but – Everyone, every time you go through one of these, it also feels very, very different. Your thoughts?
David, I used to have a good crystal ball mind. I don't anymore.
The ball's broken, that's true.
You know, I'm going to give you a perfect example, unmortgage banking related. You know, we're supposed to be paying $4 or $5 a gallon for gas right now, and I filled up last night for $3.06 in Alabama. So who knows? But I think Matt's points are well on. I'm a little bit concerned that this cycle is probably not like anything else you and I have seen in our careers. And mm-hmm. let me tell you why I think it's not like that. Too damn political.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that typically what you and I've been looking at have been, you know, inflation, deflation, tight money, all kind of things in the past, and we're used to seeing that, and we're used to seeing volumes run rampant for a while and volumes fall off, and we're looking at the Fed doing things in somewhat of a logical manner and having a reason for doing what they're doing. Nowadays, they seem to play catch up. Then they do a lot, then they hold on for a while. I just don't think there's any certainty in what we're dealing with out there right now. And I think it's, you know, in the throes of an election coming up and everything else associated with it, I just think everybody's afraid of their own shadow and afraid to make the right kind of decisions. And, you know, certainly you and I both know the global markets have a major effect on us in the United States. So what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, and then having the meetings between the Russian and Chinese folks and all that, all those things have an effect on the global market. So it's kind of unique what happened. And so I don't have a crystal ball. I'm hoping it's going to be better rather than worse. And the reason why I think it should be better is because in many aspects it can't get any worse. I mean, we are really hurting a lot of people right now in our economy. You know, I shared a number the other day in a presentation, and I might have shared it on our call last week, but I'm going to share it again. If you think about that number that I was researching, and you can't believe everything you read on the internet, but you can believe the Bureau of Labor Statistics surveys they do. And when you hear that 65% of our college graduates are thinking about moving home with mom and daddy, that tells you they're not predicting a bright and great future when they finish college, if they're going to go home and live with mom and daddy. So that's a lot of young people out there that are deciding they're not going to go spend money maybe on cars or houses or other things. which will have a detrimental effect on the economy and also consumer goods. If they're staying at home with mom and dad and not buying their stereo units and their TVs and computers and all this other stuff themselves. So I think we got to watch everything closely, and let's just hope for the best.
Yeah, I think we're there's so many aspects I could go with that. I think you're spot on with this is more has gotten the feds are responding to political pressure. This has become a lot more political. At least that's mixed in there. It seems like it's a greater component in of the recipe. That's what they're doing. And for us to be back up at these highs again on the 10-year, it's just it's a little discouraging right at the moment. And I think it's creating the uncertainty. And that's the thing that is really plaguing us all, Mark, is the uncertainty. And I want to talk about that a little bit later on in the podcast. I want to talk about how people are responding to the uncertainty. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But thank you. Appreciate it so much. Matt, good job. If you want to check out all of Matt's services, go over to mbslive.net. Sign up for the trial period using the extended trial code of LOL. You'll sign up. No credit card will be required of you, and you get a free trial period. Check it out. Appreciate them so much. Alice Alvey is back from vacation. So good to have you back, Alice. We missed you. And
Thank you, Dave. Good to be back.
Great time. You and Andy had a great time and fly fishing in Montana. One of my favorite things to do. Love it. That is something, Alice, when you're in that kind of beautiful country, floating a river and or wading in. Did you go wading or did you do some floating? Did you do both of that? Do both?
We did both. Yep. We did a lot of, hunting along the banks and wading as well as floating. Yep.
It is so much fun. Just nothing quite like it. So anyway, good to have you back. What do you have for us today? By the way, Alice is CMV Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, and she's going to be giving us her latest legislative update. Alice?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to tag along a little bit on MBA's advocacy report that they gave us earlier in the program. And they mentioned the MBA joint letter to the White House National Economic Council on trying to get some movement to get the FHA Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund premium, which is our mortgage insurance premiums on our FHA 203Bs, get that dropped. So it was a joint letter between the NAR, MBA, National Association of Home Builders, and the Manufactured Housing Institute. So really just those groups were in the joint letter. They didn't target a specific amount, but what it did do was prompt me to go look at the quarterly report that HUD issues about the Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund. And so in June, they issued their report. It came out late July. And you look at where FHA is reporting on the fund. So in the quarterly version, all they do is give statistics. It's the annual report where they give us a little bit of insight into some of the stress testing and their predictions on how well the fund will do. And at the end of the day, FHA has to have extreme confidence that if they were to lower the premiums, they can still cover whatever defaults and delinquencies might be on the horizon. And so in this version of the report, there were some interesting facts. I think it's helpful for everybody who's in the industry to understand the direction that FHA loans are taking. So in Q3, which is actually Q2 of the calendar year, because FHA's fiscal year starts with October, so they call it the Q3 report, where it's Q2 of 2022, they did about 218,000 loans in about what at the time is edging out to be about a $2.5 trillion market. Now, that's in contrast. If you just look back to 2021, they did 360,000 applications, and we were sitting in about a $4 trillion market, over $4 trillion at that point. So that alone, just looking at their information, shows you how dramatic of a drop we've had in the overall market and in the drop of FHAs. Their average credit score is dropping. The report shows that they're now at a 663. So they're starting to trend back into like the 2019s. And if their DTIs are rising, their average DTI is rising, and their delinquency rate, they're seriously delinquent. When they look at the COVID-19 numbers, 46% of those are ending up in loss mitigation. 11% of those are going into true seriously delinquent loans. So, you know, and then the rest are getting paid off or self-cure, and about 7% are still in forbearance. So that pipeline's still unwinding and isn't done yet.
Interesting.
And I think they're going to lean on those facts that their risks are getting higher, that they won't give us any kind of – I don't know what they'll do, but I think we have to just keep that in mind. They're going to be hedging to not do anything for a little while, even though those of us in the industry would love the relief in the FHA monthly payment. So I'm glad somebody's taking action, but they would have to take a lot more than writing that letter. Someone would have to go pound on some doors, I think. The other thing, just real quick, there was a case that's mentioned, the FTC and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they filed an amicus brief in the U.S. Court of Appeals, Third Circuit, in the case of Ingram versus Experian. This is something that we will continue to watch because the way that this recent court ruling came out, it sounds like all consumers may be at a bit of a disadvantage in filing for disputes because this case really made it more difficult for consumers, and that's why FTC and CFPB are fighting back and want that this court ruling is interpreted a little bit better. So the case involved a request from a consumer to Comcast, and they were trying to declare that this account was not delinquent. You can find the details in their press release, but it is really interesting that the court ruled in favor of the debt collector, saying that the furniture, who in this case was Experian, is only obligated to investigate bona fide indirect disputes. And somehow the court interpreted that the creditor was in the right, that this wasn't bona fide. And whereas the FTC and CFPB are standing behind consumers saying, oh, no, it's very clear that they do need to investigate these, and they can't just tell a consumer, nope, we're not going to investigate your dispute. It's going to stay on the credit report. And so that's a little bit of what the battle's about. The battle's about when can the creditor say, I'm not going to investigate your dispute. It's going to stay on the credit report. So this is a time we're in favor. We want to support the FTC and where the CFPB are going in this case. So that's my 2 cents on that piece. And that's back to you, Dave. That's where we're at today.
If you could send us a link on that, I want to get as much of that in there because that actually could be a bit of a landmark case.
Yeah, I think so. We'll have to see how it plays out for consumers. So we'll definitely keep an eye on it.
Keep an eye on it. Thank you so much, Alice. Good to have you back. Appreciate it. Well, if you could stay on, we're going to be talking about I'd love to get your perspective on what the industry should be doing as we're looking at this and the focus we have on the continuing contraction in the markets. But let's get over to Alan Pollack and take a look. By the way, before we go to Alan, I want to say you can download all of Alice's content, look at all her reports as well as anyone else here on the podcast by going to Lickit on Lending and go over to the various segments that we have, and you can download and listen to all of their various segments. Alice puts out so much, as does everybody, puts out valuable information. People are always requesting, how can I get more of that? And that's where you do it. Lickit on Lending and go to Alice's segment. Alan Pollack is here with us. Alan, good to have you here. I don't know if you were dialed in and had joined us when I talked about the digital conference this last week. I talked to several vendors.
You did.
Yeah, you did hear it. So 95, they said, I said 90 to 95. They said it was probably more than that. I looked at the registration list. It was who registered. There was just so few. And then who actually attended, I guess it was even more so that way. So, anyway,
yeah.
What did you pick up?
And
were you
Jamie,
there?
If you remember, you, I am. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes. I mean, were you there at digital?
No, I didn't go. And I think you had asked me week prior if I was going, and I said no. And really, the reason was due to the fact that one, it's typically a vendor show or a vendor conference, but the other reason why is just that. Lenders are not, right? Our listeners, you folks out there, you're not visiting every conference, right? You're visiting the ones that make the most sense, and you're trying to figure out what it is you need to do. I know of vendors that are hurting right now because it's harder to sell. They're investing in relationships rather than new tech, or they're investing in ways. If you look, David, what was just announced by the rocket companies, they just launched what they're calling, you ready for this? Let me just pull it up right here. They're calling it the inflation buster. And so it's not a tech play. It's a relationship play, and they're offering the first year a lower interest rate on their products for homeowners, new homeowners. So, you know, that's what we're focused on right now. How do you continue to acquire the opportunity to be in front of new people, and how do you use the technology you have to keep your costs low, keep your process efficient? Like that's where we're at right now, unfortunately. Now is the time to invest in technology. And actually, David, before I go into one or two items that I want to talk about today, I answered your question, but I wanted to see if you wanted to go anywhere else with your question about the mortgage tech conference that I didn't go to.
Yeah, no, I did. You did go to. I remember now that I asked you that. But sometimes I know you say you're not going to go, and then you do end up going at the last minute.
Oh, yeah.
So I just find out because you. But I'm more interested. I wanted to get your take on it because it is a heavily vendor conference. But I'm wondering if they're going to continue to have the conference just based on is the value there. So that's just one of your perspective on that. Several people asked me.
Yeah.
Love to get out.
I mean, hey, is it great the fact that, you know, vendors get to see what everyone else is doing and kind of it's a good place for vendors to meet and connect. It's always been good for that. But with the Innovators Conference that the CMBA puts on and with the MBA's technology conference, there's just so many conferences to compete against each other. So it'd be interesting right next year to see what conferences maybe if they join together and
I think that's what becomes a combined.
Yeah.
I do more of a combined effort. I doubt that'll happen because money is made at these conferences. MBA does a really good job, so I doubt they will, but we'll see. Good suggestion. What do you got for a tech update?
Oh, God, so much. Well, David, let me just back up. You brought up a topic, and there's just kind of something I've thought about for a while that I haven't even really talked to you about, so I'll mention it anyways. But, you know, we've got so many partners and just relationships here at Lickin' on Lending that for the folks listening, if you want to shoot us your feedback, if you think that having some type of virtual or online conference from Lickin' on Lending or some collaborative way to bring some topics together, whether it's in a live format that's not as a recorded podcast that you can participate in, let us know. We're always looking for ways to better connect with you and connect with our partners.
Yes. Good. Thank you. You never have to ask for permission of what we can do to add more value. Always looking for ways to add more value.
That's right. So, God, I mean, I can go through the rundown of all the companies that are working together. You know, lots of good releases like Flowify just did a partnership with National Association of Mortgage Brokers, which makes perfect sense. And, you know, there's tons of these other great relationships being made. But I saw this one article I thought was really interesting. One is I just brought up the rocket companies. Another one is Amrock, which is a company that just launched a new proprietary technology designed to electronically close, so e-close mortgages transactions entirely from a mobile device, right? So everything's been online, a computer, they've modified it a little bit. So that's something you want to look out for if you're interested in that area. Candor, which we all know, their technology looks at documents and data and does an automatic underwriting, so it's kind of like a pre-underwrite decision or an underwriting decision. They've just awarded their patent, so they've been patent pending all this time. Another great update. But, David, this is what really caught my eye today. No bad dad jokes today, by the way. What caught my eye is this article was in the Credit Union Times, right? And I don't know the number today, but like 2 years ago, there was something like 12,000 financial institutions out there. And Credit Union Times, and remember, when you deal with credit unions, right, for you folks that are listening, you're talking about independent relationships with your mortgage technology vendors and mortgage lending. You're talking about marketing and QSO type of relationships, right? You have a lot going on. And you have, obviously, the handshake relationship that you want to maintain with your members. So get this. They call it three areas for credit unions to prioritize during economic uncertainty. And it's at CU Times again. I think it's in their CU Tech Hub or it's labeled that. So get this. The first one is reemphasizing member support and interest rates as interest rates rise, right? So it's education. It's conversation. It's digital tools. What do you have that you can offer to help your customers know that this is why they have a relationship with you, right? You're not those big digital banks. You're not, you know, the non-mortgage bank lenders. You are their partner in their financial success. So in their financial plan. So literacy, education. Maybe you've always had your rates just posted on your website with some little tech tool that you have. Maybe it's a click-to-call button. Maybe it's, hey, these are our rates today, but we want to talk to you. Click this button. Right? It's a little service you can buy online that gets you instant connection to make a phone call. They call you. You can go to a call center. Your phone rings. Right? These are kind of reemphasizing member support. The other one, David, was leveraging conversational AI to drive efficiency. Now, we've been here. We've
really
talked about
interesting.
This.
Yes.
But you got to remember, this doesn't mean that you got to build the Jetsons chatbot that can do your laundry, change your clothes, wash the house, and drive your kids to school, right? This is it could be nothing more than just customer support on your website.
Yeah.
What time am I open? Where's the location? How do I get your mortgage rates? It can be all those simpler things. You don't need a tech team to implement. There's online designer tools. There's out-of-the-box chatbots, all different ways that you can go with that. And then the next one is abandoning the unfulfilled promise of omnichannel. Now, that's crazy, right? Because we've been talking all these years, and if you remember, I kept telling you about the Breaking Banks podcast. Omnichannel lending is the way to go. Right?
Yeah.
Banks and credit unions want to deliver a single experience. So what this is saying is omnichannel was a great concept in theory, but the industry has grown frustrated with its unrealized promise. And a lot of the millennial shoppers have ditched the experience that the banks think they want to have, and they're going to just online banking. So what this article is saying is you must engage with those members that want that fully digital experience at the right time at the source, and that source is online banking. So why do I mention this, right? How many financial institutions do we have on the call here? I could say raise your hand. I know we've got a lot. And non-financial institutions. Now's the time to partner together. Now's the time to think about the financial literacy and education, and it's how to provide information to those digital shoppers without costing more on the technology side to bring them and get that opportunity to be in front of them again. So not much on the crazy tech side, David, but really good, food for thought stuff for today.
Yeah, good food. You know, what you're bringing out is something I want to talk more about maybe a little bit later in the podcast, and that has to do with partnering with the financial institutions. We're hearing more and more, like, for example, CRA product. Now, that's not a tech part of the update, but what we're finding more and more lenders are going out to help lenders, independent mortgage bankers, or IMBs, are partnering with their local financial institutions to meet the CRA requirements. And they're going, yeah, but we need to have something unique. Well, you can work with a financial institution to create a unique product that meets CRA requirements. That's helping the local financial institutions give you an advantage of creating a product that is unique. And if you do not know how to do that, get a hold of me. I'd love to share with you, our listener, on how to do exactly that. Lot of opportunity. And people
and
are just,
David.
Yes, Alan.
Just the opposite of that. So if you're a financial institution and you have niche products or unique lending products you can offer as when those other lenders turn down loans or they're not the right fit for that person,
right?
You can get those leads and you can look for opportunities to actually service those customers.
I was
so
just
there's
talking
all kinds of opportunities.
Yeah, to be a partnership.
All kinds of opportunities there. Yeah.
Yeah, it goes both ways. Really good point. Really good point, Alan. Appreciate it. Alan Pollack, appreciate you being here. Love all the stuff that's going on. A little disappointed in some of the outtakes that we heard from digital. Called around, tried to find out if there's anything newsworthy.
Yeah.
Other than the only thing that's newsworthy is all vendors, no lenders. It's kind of frustrating. So anyway, at least the vendors we're talking to are saying it's a little bit frustrating. So, that's a good suggestion. Let's work on consolidating some of these up so that we have one conference you go to and it's works for everybody. Good job. If you want to get hold of Alan or send him ideas, a lot of you do, go to send it to Alan with a D, A-L-L-E-N at tms-advisors.com. And we look forward to it. I like the idea of us putting on a bit of a virtual conference. I've been thinking about that. So spot on. Appreciate it. All right. Let's get over to Mark Helm with the loan servicing update. Mark is without question the nation's leading expert on loan servicing. We're interested in getting your thoughts on it, Mark.
Thank you, David. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're going to do over the next few podcasts, and then I'm going to talk specifically about something from that today. But the plan is right now, today, we'll talk a little bit about FHA and VA, which are kind of precursors before you can deal with, you know, Fannie, Freddie, Ginny approvals. And then the next time we meet, I'll probably cover Freddie and approval, and after that, the Fannie approval, and then after that, talk on the Ginnie Mae approval. The Fannie and Freddie are a lot alike, but they're different, and Ginny is fairly dramatically different from Freddie or Fannie. But I want to talk about FHA and VA today, and I want to start off from a different approach than most. You know, I had an assumption when I started consulting that was wrong. My assumption was that most everybody had their FHA and VA approvals. That wasn't true. In fact, I'm working with a shop right now that has a VA approval and doesn't have an FHA approval, and they do a tremendous volume. They focus on the VA business. And
really?
Consequently, I work with people that do a large FHA volume and don't have VA approval, which really kind of surprised me, because back when I started in the business, the holy grail was getting your FHA and VA approval, and then you could originate conventional and FHA and VA, and you got all the bases covered, and you'd be a successful mortgage banker. But now people are into focusing on what they're good at, and I guess that's good, and doing a good job. But if we talk about those things, one of the things that's really important to me, because I get to deal with it on the consulting side, and I'm going to share with you some of the things I deal with and why you can, why and how you should do a better job with those FHA and VA relationships. The first and most important thing you need to know about those, the approval process, if you don't have one of those, is not that difficult. It's about crossing your T's and dotting your I's and put your best foot forward. I feel like that most anybody gets turned down for FHA and VA approval, unless they don't have the net worth, which is a kind of a no-starter, is that they basically don't pay attention to the application process and give it the attention they should, and they make mistakes, and they misrepresent things. So when you're doing an application for either one of those, you've not only got to give them the information they request, but you got to explain anything in that application process that looks kind of funky, and that's what we're good at, is reviewing the application stuff to make sure you're putting your best foot forward and you've explained everything. Because if you have a strange ownership, they don't like multi-owner LLCs, as an example, FHA doesn't. So you got to look at things like that and make sure you get your approval ducks lined up. But then the most important thing is, once you get those approvals, and they now take 6 weeks to 2 months to get them when you get them, as you're working on it, if you get indications from the people at FHA and VA that you're not going to get an approval, be smart enough to pull your application, sacrifice your application fee, and pull your application before you get turned down, because there's nothing worse than trying to explain after the fact why you got turned down by VA FHA. So I haven't had to do that on VA. I don't even know if they allow you to approve it. I'm pretty sure I pull it. I think they would. I know positively that FHA will allow you to pull it if you're going to be turned down before they issue a turn down on it. And that gives you an opportunity. They'll give you the letter and say why you were going to be turned down. You can work on those things and reapply after you cross your T's and dot your I's. But the next thing is very important for those of you out there that do have an FHA and VA approval. Internally, your processes in mortgage banking, you have compliance reviews, internal audit, and quality control reviews. And inside each one of those, they have a possibility of seeing that you might not have done something exactly correctly on an FHA or VA loan application. And don't feel like the Lone Ranger on that. We're all guilty of that. Things happen, especially when you have new employees. And as much as you try to train people on everything, and as much as you kind of review them, sometimes things get slipped by you, and maybe you won't even see it until you do a post-closing audit, okay? But here's what you need to remember. Be smart enough, pick up the phone or shoot an email, and self-report on what you find. It's always better to self-report on anything that you didn't do right rather than waiting for FHA or VA to find it in an audit and hold your feet to the fire. Be professional enough in your company that you say, we're human, we can make mistakes, we fixed it, or we're going to fix it, or we're trying to fix it, how can we fix it, FHA or VA, and just let them know. And it might be on FHA. You might end up owing them a loan indemnification that lasts for 5 or 10 years, but that's better than, you know, getting an uninsured loan later on down the road. So anyway, that's kind of the things you have to work for, because if you do an uninsured loan and you sold it to somebody, put it in the Ginnie Mae pool, guess what? You get a loan back. You don't want that. So I just want to caution everybody to pay attention to their closing process, their servicing process, and if you do have any issues, call, talk to VA, FHA, tell them what happened, tell them how it happened, tell them how you're going to fix it. If you don't know how to fix it, ask their help. They'll help you on that, because they'd much rather you self-report on that than them find it and audit. And let me give you an example why you should on HUD, for sure. On your quarterly financial statements, you sign this certification that you do everything right. And you could, your feet could be held to the federal brimstone and fire if you signed that and you didn't do everything right. So that's a ace in the hole of why you should report everything you have like that. So I hope this is helpful for you to have an understanding and working with FHA and VA. And I too, like David had done before, want to let people know on the phone. We want to hear what you want to talk about. And if you have any questions directly for me, just send it to Mark, M-A-R-C, at tms-advisors.com, and I'll be glad to either respond directly back to you by email or call, or I'll cover it on the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, David.
Good job, Mark. Appreciate it. That's so important. People say, you know, if we make a mistake, do we want to report that? Well, we know of a company that did not do that and lost several of their approvals on it. It's something you absolutely must do. And people will be are willing to work with you. The agencies are willing to work with you, FHA, VA, willing to work with you when you come forward with something like this. Hey, just want to let you know we spotted this. This is what we're fixing. It shows confidence. Hiding it shows lack of integrity, sends messages, and it's a message you do not get to control once it's out. So strong, great word, Mark. Appreciate it so much. All right. I want to get into another aspect of what we're talking about. I'm going to start with you, Alan, where we, when we're looking at the amount of lift that some of the decisioning technologies out there are. We got Candor coming on next month as an advertiser with us. They're one of the ones out there. We also have other entities out there providing a lot of lift to in the world of technology, but it still is not enough. Are any thoughts on this, Alan, when it comes to what should be a reasonable lift that you can get from these various technologies and what we can hopefully increase the productivity on? Let's pick underwriting, starting there. Any thoughts? Should we be able to double the amount of loans an underwriter is able to do, generally speaking?
Well, this is one of those areas, David, where it's somewhat superficial in the beginning. So you can sign up for any service, and they're all fantastic, by the way. You can push your loans through them, but the process in which you get the loans to them, the process in which you identify and how you transfer the documents and the data that goes with the loans, and then how you get all the data back and how you assess the data and understand which loans to move forward, there's an integration and a workflow process that has to support it. And so you could send 100 loans over, get an instant pre-close or pre-underwriting response back, get the insurance rider that goes with it. Fantastic. But now what do you do with it? You need to identify, cross-check, you know, dot I's, cross T's. You're still moving loans through the process manually. And so I won't go into too much detail because it was a quick question. But the short answer is yes, there can be an immense amount of lift, especially on the standard loans that are kind of vanilla and that go through the process very easy, and you can just cut them out. So if you think 50% of your loans take an underwriter one full day, maybe an underwriter can only do 5 loans per underwriter per day, and that's a standard loan. Well, imagine if it only took 10 minutes to process those. So, right, you have an entire day now of that time that's been saved. That's an example of how I would look at it. But again, there's a workflow process around it that still has to be supported.
Yeah, you bring up the workflow process. That's so important. I mean, if you're investing the time, if you haven't invested the time, if you have invested the time, let's say that slow enough for people to get what I'm trying to say here, you will realize much greater benefits than if you have not. And that's one of the things that I want to bring out. One of the things we're seeing, folks, is, and our listeners, and we're finding that people have not cut far enough, and they have not done sufficient. Now, there's two ways of doing this. You can hire more and more people and more on the originators, trying to get a lift going on there. Companies are doing that very successfully, but that's been going on, but it's still, the market is down significantly. So what should you be doing? Are you cutting sufficiently? It really comes down, are you measuring, which goes back to process, are you measuring the productivity for each one of the functions, and how are you measuring it? And are you getting an improvement? You will, by just studying it. What you study and pay attention to will get a result. It's amazing how that works. Paying more attention to the number of loans or a process by which you're doing it, you'll get a benefit and a lift. Now, a lot of people are saying, I don't have time to do that. every mortgage banker, Mark, I talk to says, I don't have time to do that. We're too busy. Now they're saying, we just got to cut. What's your thoughts on it, Mark? You've always been one who is really focused on process efficiency. Your thoughts?
Well, as we talked about in prior podcasts, I think the most important thing is that we focus on what we're doing and do the right things. And cuts are something that are real ambiguous right now. I mean, I think the smartest thing people can do when you're dealing with the loan officer in is to focus on the productivity of the people, et cetera. And I've actually made a suggestion to some person recently that had needed to cut back in their fixed expense. I suggested to them, maybe you want to kind of help these people turn into brokers who can sell you loans if you don't want them operating under your company and where you're covering all the overhead and expenses. And they like that idea because they got a couple branches. They might be able to help those people convert to be brokers until times change and they want to come back or can bring them back again. And at least the people have some help from the guys and would be probably appreciative of any help they could get on that. And I think the thing we talked about before, too many people start cutting away at the mothership without really focusing on the fact that there's a delay factor in loans that come through the cycle. So if you're still doing a tail volume that's coming through and you can't cut all your mothership people simultaneously with cutting your branches because you got that volume coming through and you got to make sure it comes through post-closing, it gets delivered, et cetera. And people sometimes cut themselves too short, cause backlog, inefficiencies, and errors in the back room earlier than they should. And last but not least, my pet peeve is too many people that do have servicing operations think, well, it's now time to go in and cut servicing too. And maybe so if they're doing not adding loans to their servicing portfolio, but I doubt very seriously that's going to be justifiable. But it's always a good time to look at all your operations. Just don't do anything stupid in servicing because of what's happening on the origination. And I'll have to tell you, every big company I worked for early on in my career did that. If the production started going off, they were 10% reductions in staff all over the company. It didn't matter what division you're in. I stood back and shook my head on that, and I said, let me figure this out again while we're doing this. Well, the production's failing, so we're going to cut servicing and backroom people. So anyway, that's the lessons I learned. Although those things have to be done, I just think you need to model it out, have an efficient model for doing it, do things fair and compassionate to all people, and realize those people might be folks you want to bring back again in another life or another company or even for your own company. So be fair to them just like you'd want them to be fair to you if you were on the receiving end of this. And that's the best advice I can give from a human nature support side.
Yeah, I was looking at my daughter. She just got laid off from a Pittsburgh company, and they gave her zero severance and nothing. I mean, and she had been there a number of years. And there was like, that just left a bit of a sting there. And I think I know things are tough. Unless you're in really financial straits, you should be paying some type of severance on this. But you need to be cutting. You absolutely need to be cutting. That's a really good point. But when you do not be cutting in servicing, especially if your portfolio, unless you sold off a whole lot of your servicing portfolio, that'd be the only reason you would be able to make some cuts in servicing. But if you're just looking cuts across the board, the CEO that goes in says we need volume is down. We need to cut employees across the board. Do not do it in servicing is what I was trying to say. Anyway, Alice Alvey, you work for a great company. I'd love to get your thoughts on Union Home. I understand is actually hiring, and so you chose to go out and expand. You might give a good word. They do a great job. I'd love to get your perspective on this topic of how to focus on this in these times.
Yeah, well, it's definitely on the sales side. There's growth. So at a time like this, you have to make sure you're having the right balance, you know, that you're continuing to grow. I really want to add to what Mark said because I fully agree. I lived that in the 94, yes, I'm that old, meltdown where, you know, in post-closing, you know, we call, you know, you've heard the expression, the rat through the snake. Well, all that volume was still sitting there and leadership says, you know, it's a blanket number across the board of all departments for the layoffs. That's just a lack of inability to lead, in my opinion. You know, you have to know your numbers. And for some reason, you don't want to manage your senior executives to say, hey, you get to keep people because I know you need people. And you over here, you can't because people are sitting around twiddling their thumbs. So that's leadership to be able to take a look at each area and understand what the right cut is for that area so that you don't, you know, tear down your infrastructure. Things will turn around, but you do have to plan, I think, through the winter months for those of us who are, you know, have for those and have people in seasonal areas that they will feel that seasonality through the winter. We've talked about that rates are expected to go up again. So this isn't bright and shiny all around the corner here. This is a long stretch for many months ahead. And so right sizing for this volume, not with any anticipation that things are going to look better. And this is when your leadership is challenged. You have to be the best leader you've ever been during these times. And I just want to throw in the quality word. You have to still maintain quality because you could end up losing more money on repurchases and lousy loans that you are closing. And right now we can't afford, no lender can afford to have any of them bought back. So back to Alan's point on technology and what should you look for in technology? Look for technology that improves quality and you have less opportunity for human error. So those are my points at the end here I wanted to throw in, Dave. Thank you.
Good, Alice. Appreciate it very much. Most important, listeners, we've got to be continuing to make cuts. This is going to get much, much worse. We're in September. We are now starting that downslope, the seasonal downturn, and a lot of people are just not getting it done. They're not cutting deep enough and far enough. Give us a call. We'd love to talk to you about the strategies. David Kittle, as a part of our consulting group, has put together a group on how to right-size your company in these times. Very busy doing a lot of that. We look forward to sharing some of those strategies with you. Get on a call with David and or myself, and we'll share those with you. Another area I want to focus on next week has to do with the secondary marketing area. A lot of people are struggling with their pricing. They're just companies that, for whatever reason, seem to be so much more aggressive. We're going to be talking about options and getting Les Parker. We'll be back getting him on and giving us some thoughts about how to use options. And does that really bring lift or does it bring just more complexity that really doesn't get you any bang for the buck? We'll talk more about that next week. Got a lot of things we're going to be talking about in a future podcast. We'd like, Mark said, we want to hear from you. Email any one of us about what you'd like to hear on this podcast related to what you and your company are going through. We have a lot of resources because of the size of our audience. We can bring in almost anybody who's willing to come onto the podcast. We got a long waiting list of people that are wanting to come here, and we'll be sharing that list with you. Check out the regular podcast that we check out our hot topic segments that we release now at least once a week, sometimes 2 a week, even sometimes more than that. But we got a lot of great hot topics that we've recorded that we'll be sharing with you in the coming months and the weeks ahead. Good to be with you, everybody. Have a great week and look forward to seeing you back here next week. Have a great week, and I'm hoping and praying that you make the right decisions on when to cut and how to cut. If you have any questions, give us a call. Talk to you soon, everyone. Have a great rest of your week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.